Hello and welcome to The Wire, your national and independent coverage of current affairs right across Australia on community and Indigenous radio. I'm Eduardo Jordan, coming to you from Radio 4EB in Mianjin, Brisbane. And today on the show...
The whole thing really blew up at the end of 2023 when divers started reporting seeing really suspicious blooms of mussels in places that had never been seen before.
A new investigation shows an invasive species of mussel might threaten a diver's paradise in New South Wales. We have all the details. Also, why skincare methods on social media need to be avoided. And later today...
That landscape out there is the future of Australia, you know? So, and that's something for us to celebrate. And the more that we as a communities interconnect, and that's something that inspires me in terms of my creativity.
An Aboriginal artist is releasing his new album today and says multiculturalism is critical for our community. We'll have this and more for you over the next half hour. Thanks for being with us today. We're on air across Australia thanks to the Community Radio Network and the support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. First up today... June 15 is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and to recognize its importance, the Unite for Action Queensland Elder Abuse Prevention Forum was held in Brisbane. The event brought in frontline professional workers across various job industries to seek solutions on eliminating elder abuse. One in six elderly Australians experience abuse in some form each year, and these abuses can include psychological, financial, and social. The Wire's Tony Pankaluik attended the event and asked Principal Solicitor from Age and Disability Advocates Australia Law, Karen Williams, why the number of elderly Australians experiencing abuse has not declined in recent years.
Well, there's many reasons for that. I think there's confusion within families around legal instruments such as enduring powers of attorney, what you can and can't do, what members of family can make various decisions. That gets confused when there's healthcare decisions to be made and the person might become frail or suffers a serious health event. And then there's broader societal factors such as housing crisis, cost of living crisis. All these factors go together, and with an increasing ageing population as well.
Where does Queensland stand compared to the rest of Australia in terms of the stats?
I probably couldn't talk to the stats of standalone in relation to Queensland. What I can say is that our laws are pretty good in Queensland, particularly around the legal frameworks. The difficulty is not enough people know about them and how to make them work on a day-to-day basis.
And in society, whereabouts do we see the highest rates of abuse? Is it retirement homes? Is it workplaces? Do we know exactly where the highest frequency in certain areas?
I think that's difficult because it looks different in the different areas. So, for example, the services that we run spend a lot of time with people in residential aged care, and how that manifests itself there is different to people in the community. So, you know, people living in multi-generational households, that can be very supportive and very enabling. But if abuse is happening, then it makes it also easier for abuse to be perpetrated. So some of the things that people find supportive, other people next door even can find abusive. And that's the difficulty. And it looks different in different areas. It could be a couple who've experienced domestic and family violence for many, many years. It could be something new that happens when a member of the family's had a stroke or something like that.
And so what are the biggest misconceptions of elder abuse?
I think the biggest misconception is around someone's decision-making ability, and that if someone has a diagnosis such as dementia or something that impacts on their thinking, people think that they can no longer take part in their own life, and therefore they're not asked about their preferences, what they want to happen. They're not involved in decision making. So in fact, they're excluded from their own lives. We should be working harder to include them.
With regards to mitigation strategies, just for future, I know we hear Medicare reforms, things like that, governments doing certain things. What do you think for future, going forward, do you think should be perhaps implemented?
I think better understanding around decision making and calling the older person in. Okay, this is going on for you. These are your circumstances. What would you like to do about them? Is this okay? Who do you find helpful? What support do you want? So starting with the older person first, rather than going to someone else maybe in the person's network and asking them what the older person wants. So checking it straight in with the older person. That can be whether you're a GP, whether you're an aged care worker, whether you're a family member, anybody. So just making it your regular practice. Okay, well, that's good to hear about that from your perspective. I'll just now ring, speak to when I next meet with the older person. I'll see what it is that they're wanting to do about this situation. And do they know their options as well?
Is there anything that I haven't mentioned, like any talking points you really feel is important that you'd like to get across listeners just as we wrap up?
Oh, thank you for that opportunity. I think it's hidden, and I think what I'd like to say that superficially things can look okay, but they may not be. And the only way you'll know is to develop a relationship and work directly with the older person and make sure that they're included and they're feeling as safe as they can be in their situation.
That was Karen Williams from ADA Australia, speaking with The Wire's Tony Pankaluwik. A community media investigation suggests government officials are preventing information from being shared about an invasive species of mussel threatening a diverse paradise in New South Wales. It comes as Australia's Environment Minister Murray Watt is in France attending the UN Ocean Conference. Community Radio Network's reporter Noah Seckham spoke with editor of the newsletter SPAC Shoalhaven, Kat Holloway, who has been chasing this story for months.
The whole thing really blew up at the end of 2023 when divers started reporting seeing really suspicious blooms of mussels in places that had never been seen before. At the same time, there was an application by the mussel farm to expand its operation by nearly double of its existing space. And the divers were increasingly filming and photographing these really extensive coverages of shallow reef with these blooms of mussels. And they were talking to other divers who had been in the bay for decades, you know, 50 years, trying to find out if this had ever been seen before. And no one had ever seen anything like it.
And I suppose one of the difficulties with the story is where we're not actually certain what species of mussel is being farmed, whether it is the native or not. What's the next step that should be taken?
What people were saying, and they're still saying now, is that they should not have approved that expansion until they'd been able to really scientifically determine whether or not these invasions of mussels were coming from the farm. Now, from the farmer's point of view, and they started harvesting 2021, they've had a lot of problems with algae blooms, with flooding. You know, it hasn't been an easy run for them, and they've invested a lot of money into this industry, and they invested it on the basis of advice from fisheries, which has claimed all along that there is really no problem with this species of mussel, that it's native, that it's not going to be causing any invasion, and fisheries themselves were really pushing hard to expand aquaculture across the states.
And so you spoke with the owner of the mussel farm. How would you describe his attitude to this whole situation?
When I interviewed Sam Gordon, the executive director of South Coast Mariculture, it was clear that he's just completely invested in this belief that this is a very sustainable way to farm protein.
I'm incredibly proud of what we're doing. We're actually one of the most sustainable forms of food production in the world and one of the most cost-effective forms of protein. The fact that we can do it within Jervis Bay Marine Park, so you can actually demonstrate that you've got one of the most sustainable food production methods within a marine park. It's fantastic.
A number of times I've heard you say how good it is that you're able to do this within a marine park. And yet that's one of the biggest concerns from the community, is that this is the kind of thing that shouldn't be happening in a marine park. What is it about operating in a marine park that makes it better for you?
I think it's better or worse, but I mean, from our position, we're really proud that we can demonstrate sustainable food production within a marine park. We think that's a good thing.
You're still happy that Jervis Bay is the right location for your farm?
Well, Jervis Bay is a fantastic location for the farm. There's not a lot of good locations for mussel farming in New South Wales.
In terms of your big vision, like obviously you're not out to destroy the marine park. You're out to grow sustainable
food. Far from it. Right. We're cleaning the marine park. I mean, you've also got to put it in context. Our mussel farm area is less than 1% of the total of Jervis Bay's area.
But the devil's in the details. And the aquaculture operation are taking all of their advice from the fisheries department. So they're shutting out information from a lot of other very respected, peer-reviewed scientific sources in order to justify this position that the mussel farming is safe. Not all mussels are the same. This is a particularly invasive species of mussel. It's already caused enormous problems throughout Europe. 2,000 kilometres of South African coastline has been destroyed. They're very concerned about it in New Zealand, which is why they don't farm it down there. And, you know, this is a mussel species that spawns four times more than the real native, Planitas. It can adapt to a wide variety of environments. It's shown to be really resilient to warming ocean temperatures. So we're looking at encouraging a species that is at already very dominant and only going to become more so. Sam Gordon really does believe that this is a good form of sustainable aquaculture. There were no baseline surveys done at all. Everyone was concerned about whether or not the buoys on the surface were going to ruin the view for the Airbnb people at Killala Beach. No one looked into the science behind this.
No, it was never identified at all, no.
So meaning DPI didn't ever bring it up with you?
No. Basically, it's never been identified as an issue, no.
Do you think it is an issue now? Is it something that you're having to rethink?
Well, it's an issue because it's perceived as an issue in the, within some of the stakeholders within the community. Based on the scientific advice we're getting and advice from government, it's not an issue.
That was Executive Director of South Coast Mariculture, Sam Gordon. For the full story, listen to the latest episode of From Pillar to Post, wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to The Wire, independent current affairs on community and Indigenous radio. I'm Eduardo Jordan in Brisbane. A big hello to our friends in Alice Springs on ACCC, to our listeners in Bankstown on Connect FM, and to the other side of the country to Radio Gulari in Broome, Western Australia. The caveman method, slugging, the timeline strand, social media skincare trends don't always have care in mind. In recent years, social media has been the home to many trends which may cause skin harm rather than solutions, especially in teens and tweens. Dermatologist from Skin Partners in Brisbane, Dr. Leon Ajib, dissects these trends and explains the impact of following harmful advice from social media, as well as what we can do to avoid the misinformation trap. The Wire's Ashley Blooming has the story.
Recently, social media has been the go-to place for skincare advice, resulting in many different and sometimes harmful trends. Have you ever heard of the tan line trend or the caveman trend? Here to explain a bit more on the harmful effects of these skincare fads is dermatologist Dr. Leona Yip.
So the most worrying trend that has been going on in social media in the recent few months or 12 months really is the tan line trend, because that is the one that can cause harm potentially, and high risk of that increases risk of skin cancers and sun damage. There is nothing sexy and nothing special about getting a tan line. And I always describe trends, it's like fashion. It comes and goes, but it's not like style where it's timeless and it stays. And what is timeless is good, healthy skin. And this is something that many teens and tweens don't tend to see just yet because they feel it's not relevant for them. So that trend is something that we really need to bust because it is not healthy and it can cause harm. The other trends that we're seeing with skincare and with routines, these are not necessarily harmful, but they're just not something that may keep the skin healthy. There may not be something that looks after your skin barrier, and there may be something that can potentially affect your skin hygiene, such as the caveman trend, for example, which is not washing your skin for days and letting it heal naturally, letting your skin go without cleansing, without moisturizer. And that is not something healthy, because if you're not washing your skin, what's going to happen is you get skin debris, skin cells. These are dead skin proteins that stay on top of your skin, and you get keratin retention, which looks yellow, and your skin can start to smell. You can also get buildup of grease, dirt, pollution on your skin that can contribute to effects on your skin barrier and can cause microinflammation of your skin that can worsen conditions such as eczema as well as pro-aging.
Beef tallow is currently the most recent trend taking social media by storm, but dermatologists are not such big fans.
So beef tallow trend, there's also something that has been very popular because it's touted as being natural. But firstly, what's natural is not necessarily good or beneficial or safe for your skin. So beef tallow may have some moisturizing properties. If you're using something for moisturizing, it's much better to use a manufactured product so we know what's in the listed ingredients and what it claims to do will actually live up to what it says it would in terms of the listed ingredients. But yeah. I think the problem is we don't know where it comes from, and it's usually these natural skincare companies that do it in small batches. So we don't know what breed of cows it's come from and where it's manufactured and whether it's not or not it's gone through safety testing, for example, and it's not TGA approved. So the safety is questionable. The efficacy is also questionable. And because it's so greasy, there's high risk of causing breakouts, particularly in those with greasy skin and acne-prone skin.
There have also been some positive trends to come out of social media, including skin cycling, using sun protection, and the glass skin trend. Dr. Leone Yip's message is clear and says that the key is educating people on how to use these products properly.
So my message is that when you see a trend on TikTok or on Instagram, it's really important to find out the credibility and the qualification of the person behind the trend and what they're saying to you. Because on social media, it is not regulated. Anyone can go out there and say something and pick something out from the air and make it sound credible. But it has to be safe, which a lot of it is not. It has to be able to prove that it's beneficial for your skin. There's a difference between scientific credibility and marketing claims. And before you know it, you may be piling on skin problems on top of healthy skin that you may have to seek help for when previously your skin's actually really well.
In light of these concerning skincare trends, dermatologists have taken to the social media themselves to combat misinformation on the front lines.
How we practice medicine 20, 30 years ago is very different to how we practice today. Because with the advent of people Googling information and with AI and with social media especially, if we're not out there as figures of medical authority giving credible advice with scientific evidence or with real-world experience of what we do and busting myths, I think it gets to a point where we see people we're fixing problems that people are getting through trends they see on social media. So it's very important, I think, that as doctors, we are sparing some of our time with preventative medicines and advocacy and education via social media. While traditional media platforms like TV and radio play a really important role, but I think research shows that many young people are scrolling through reels every day and spending hours on their phone. So it's really important that we get onto the social media platform and spread the message that way as well.
Ultimately, if you do decide to take TikTok skincare advice, Dr. Leona's advice is simple.
If you're not sure about what to use, because the world of skincare, the world of skincare trends on social media is really confusing. And as a layperson, if you're not used to skin health and what to look out for, my suggestion is always go to a skincare professional and start there.
That was dermatologist Dr. Leona Yip speaking with The Wire's Ashley Blooming. First Nations artist believes multiculturalism needs to be reflected more in the arts and in any other sector. Guguyalanji and Verigubaman Jongaji has released a new music album today in Brisbane and says multiculturalism is a pillar of our community. Changaji released a tease of his new music at Radio 4EB's music compilation party this week, and I started asking him how he started in the visual arts industry.
I'm Changaji. I'm a Kukuyalaji Birigaba man that resides here in Yagara Turrbal country. Traditional ties further up north past Cairns, but historical ties of Cherbourg, Warrabin, Napalm Island and Inala. So, yeah, I'm a multidisciplinary artist. It happened organically. I started in '93. And many different musical hats throughout the years. I went through a cultural transformation where I learned the old law, traditional law, over the last 20 years, and that's enabled me to, put down the beer, pick up the spear type analogy. I've been 8 years sober, and I've been living, you know, within, I don't know, my real skin. And I've been sharing that over this last period of time. I've got the album coming out next week at the Powerhouse, but so we've got a launch at the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast. That's been 32 years in the making.
Speaking about the launch, tell us a little bit about the launch, your album. What is it about? What motivated you to produce it?
Yeah, so it's the album's titled Betting on Black, and it was written in hospital, the title of the song.
Oh.
Yeah, and I had two strokes, two heart attacks. Over this last 10 years, I had open heart surgery 2020. I wasn't expected to live. I went down into theatre 7 times, and when you see the old people around your bed spiritually, you know, you feel like you're going home to, we call a wild gundamount, to heaven, you know. But it wasn't to be, you know, it wasn't my time. And I've been given this extra lease on life, this rebirth, this transformation where I walked in as Troy Brady, but I come out as Changaji. A sober man, but a man with, you know, my vernacular is panoramic, I can see, and I'm writing beautiful music and I'm having a beautiful dialogue around things that matter to me, you know.
So I understand as well that you sing in language. Tell us a little bit more about that. What sort of language and what inspires you to sing in language?
I think it's just the connectedness to country, to the old world, we call that Ngoro, and just to maintain the balance between this matrix to where we coexist, but also that old world. I feel like I got the balance, I got the fire right. It's not too hot, it's not too cold. It's a family fire now. I know what that big fire is like because I used to drink, I used to drugs, everything, all the above I used to do, but now I'm kind of growing into I'm a grandfather, I've got two beautiful grandsons. Yeah, I got two beautiful grandsons, I had two sons. Yeah, and that's what these songs are, a repository of information for those that are coming after. So I'm looking 50, 100, 200 years down the track. That's why I'm creating all of this old language songs. I don't necessarily sing it in the old way that the old binga sing, but I sing it in my way. And I get the go-ahead in terms of cultural protocol from the old followers up north there.
That's very interesting. Now, you mentioned your family. You mentioned the connection to country. What does family mean to you and the connection to country too?
Going through that process in hospital, the only thing that I wanted and yearned for was family, you know. And it's through the good times, the bad times, the sad times, you know, because we don't... One of the songs is called Kau Kau, and Kau Kau means the road, the vicissitudes, the ups and downs of life, and how we respond to those roads and hurdles is you know... defines our characters, you know. So for me, I lean on family all the time, you know. Family are like oxygen to me. They get on my nerves, but I love them, you know. Particularly when I look at my little grandsons, you know, and the energy and the oxygen and just everything that they, it's like lightning, Jadamali. It's like, pow! I'm like, damn, this is what I'm doing it for. I've got to, you know, remind myself, you know.
Fantastic. And my last question, well, you're First Nations, you're in a multicultural, a multi-ethnic radio station. How critical is, or how important it is for this intersection to be more often within the community?
That landscape out there is the future of Australia, you know? So, and that's something for us to celebrate. And the more that we as a communities interconnect, create dialogue around where we stand within the society, and that's something that I advocate for, that's something that I sing about, and that's something that inspires me in terms of my creativity. So there's so much work to be done. I feel like my callings are broad, and to take that old language, but also not necessarily the teachings, but the landscape of what Australia looks like.
That was Gugu Yalanji and Birriguba man, Jongaji. And that's the end of the show today. Thanks so much for listening wherever you're in Australia. The Wire is a co-production between community radio stations 2SER, Radio Adelaide, 4ZZZ, and Radio 4EB in Melbourne and Brisbane, with the great support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation and the Community Radio Network. We'll see you next week, same time, on your local station. And if you would like to listen to any of our stories again, you can go to our website at thewire.org.au. The Wire acknowledges the traditional custodians of the Turrbal and Jagera countries where this program has been produced, and we pay our respects to Aboriginal elders past, present and emerging. Today The Wire came to you from Radio 4EB in Mianjin, Brisbane. I'm Eduardo Jordan. Thanks so much for your company, and we'll see you next time on The Wire.